It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Stephanie Kuo. Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss wants a controversial Confederate plaque removed from the state capitol in Austin. The plaque, called Children of the Confederacy Creed, rejects slavery as an underlying cause of the Civil War. It was installed in 1959. Strauss, a Republican, said today in a letter to state officials that the plaque is, quote, blatantly inaccurate. Democratic State Representative Eric Johnson of Dallas also wants the plaque taken down. Johnson said he applauds Strauss for doing the right thing and that the House Speaker's request is a step in the right direction. The letter comes after a Robert E. Lee statue was removed from a Dallas park named for the Confederate general last week. The city of Dallas is closing the downtown shelter where about 200 Hurricane Harvey evacuees have been staying. The evacuees are moving to the Tommy M. Allen Recreation Center in Oak Cliff. At one point, the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center hosted more than 2,500 evacuees. Fort Worth and Irving have closed their shelters. Immigrants in the country legally who've had contact with immigration and law enforcement officials tend to be more fearful of the immigration system than those who are undocumented. That's according to a new study based on Dallas County residents. Sociologist Assad El Assad presented his findings today at the New York-based Vera Institute of Justice.
For immigrants who have never been deported, participating in the legal system, actually being legal, represents its own source of risk for being embedded in this system that tracks and surveils you to make sure that you're obeying the law after you've gotten in line and done everything right to participate in American society in a way that a lot of people would like you to.
The sample size is small. Assad spoke to 55 immigrants of Hispanic or Latino descent between 2013 and 2015. That was before President Trump was elected and his administration ramped up immigration enforcement efforts. A Collin County suburb is among the best places to live in the country, according to Money Magazine. KERA's Molly Evans reports.
Allen, Texas is the second best place to call home in the United States. Money Magazine has been producing its annual Best Places to Live list for 30 years. This year's list analyzed cities between 10,000 and 100,000 people. The magazine focused on job growth, cost of living, schools, affordable homes, crime, entertainment, and, quote, an overall sense of pleasantness. Allen ranked high for its median home price, average commute time, and high school graduation rate. Other Texas cities made it on this year's list, too. Grapevine and Wiley at numbers 19 and 20, Bedford came in at number 23. The number one city was not in Texas. It's Fishers, Indiana. Molly Evans, KERA News.
Learn more about this year's rankings at keranews.org. Now to think, in a journalist's front row seat to the 2016 campaign. Last year, journalist Katie Turr was tapped by NBC to cover Donald Trump's presidential bid. And quickly, Turr was singled out at multiple rallies as a media member Trump loved to hate. Today on Think, she talked with Chris Boyd about what she learned about America from covering his campaign.
I saw this feeling of, why are our jobs being shipped overseas? Why can't I say what I'm thinking in my head? Why is my patriotism getting mistaken for racism? How come I can't talk to my family members who have moved to a big city and vice versa? We just stop talking to each other. We don't understand each other any longer. We don't have a lot of empathy for each other, especially, you know, in the world of social media where you can hide behind anonymity. You say things to people on social media you would never say to them in real life. And there's this wedge that's being driven into this country. People just wanted to find a way to get things done again. And even the ones that didn't really like Donald Trump, held their nose and voted for him, did so because they really just wanted something to change. And they felt like, what is the worst that can happen? Politicians don't represent us any longer. Congress is getting nothing done. Let's try something radically different.
Katie Turr is the author of Unbelievable, My Front Row Seat to the Craziest Campaign in American History. She'll be at the Texas Tribune Festival in Austin on Friday. Think will also broadcast from Austin Thursday and Friday. Check out our lineup of special guests at think.kera.org. On Tuesdays, KERA's One Crisis Away project explores life on the financial edge. Today, how teachers offset poverty in the classroom by reaching into their wallets. For some parents, filling a shopping cart with school supplies is a chore, and for others, it's an impossibility. As KERA's Courtney Collins reports, many teachers would rather spend their own money than see kids in their classrooms go without.
It's only September, so supply cabinets at W.S. Ryan Elementary in Denton are still pretty stocked.
Glue sticks, some colored pencils, crayons, fat markers, skinny markers.
Willa Kemper is a bilingual teacher. She handles fifth grade math and science. To get through the year, her kids need everything from crayons to Clorox wipes and a number of other items on the school supply list that went out to parents over the summer, a list the majority of parents couldn't afford to fulfill.
This year, I have, between both classes, I have 40 kids, and I only had 15 out of the two classes that were able to bring part of the stuff.
Kemper's classroom doesn't look bare, though. Shelves are lined with neatly labeled composition books. There's construction paper and markers aplenty. A table she calls the share area is glutted with glue sticks.
Probably 90, maybe.
The reason for the glue stick surplus of 2017? Kemper, a 22-year veteran teacher, bought 300 of them over the summer. She shops, keeps her eyes open for sales, and hoards school supplies all year long, so her classroom will stay stocked. And she has a deal with her husband, a $500 supply budget over the summer, and $100 each month once the kids come back. That's $1,400 of her own money each school year. The average pay for a teacher of Kemper's experience level in Denton is about $60,000 a year, so that means she's spending nearly 2.5% of her salary on pencils, pens, and pocket folders. There is a reason.
My parents had six kids, and I was a kid that didn't have anything to show up to school, and I know how that feels, and I don't want any kid to feel that way.
The internet is filled with blog entries from parents bemoaning what they deem outrageous school supply lists. Kids are asked to arrive with dozens of number two pencils, Ziploc bags, paper towels, even baby wipes. Teachers say a lot of parents can't afford to buy any of it, and the school district isn't making up the difference.
Supplies here. And here.
Charlotte May teaches third grade, also at Ryan Elementary in Denton. And she just realized dry erase markers weren't on this year's supply list, which means...
I just put on my to-do list in my phone, go buy Expo markers for the class. I have 18 students, you know. One of them who's going to leave their lid off of their marker is going to need another one. So I'm probably going to need at least, you know, five or six more. And that's just until they run out.
May says she expects to spend about $1,000 before the final school bell rings in June. According to a survey from Agile Education Marketing, the typical teacher shells out close to $500 a year for supplies. And while some parents gripe about what they're expected to buy before school starts, May says others buy extra just to be nice.
I can't think of any year that someone wasn't throwing in an extra glue stick here or there for somebody else. As much as people complain about it, there's always the good people out there too, I think.
Willa Kemper has seen that too, and she's also seen parents who are horribly embarrassed that they can't do more. And that's why setting aside a chunk of each paycheck to keep her students in spiral notebooks just makes sense to her. She says the kids in her bilingual class have enough to be worried about.
They're struggling with trying to understand English and Spanish and math and science, and then add on to it, I don't have a pencil. I mean, that's just too much to be on their shoulders. That's an adult issue, in my opinion.
In Kemper's class, it's a teacher issue, and always will be. Courtney Collins, KERA News.
Coming up tomorrow morning, for decades, the percentage of people who die from colorectal cancer in U.S. has been declining. But a study out earlier this year showed deaths from colorectal cancer increasing for some younger Americans. Screening is one way to detect and even prevent the cancer. What can be done to convince people to get tested? That story tomorrow morning at 8:22 during Morning Edition. In the forecast, partly cloudy tonight with a low around 76. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 95. It's 94 degrees right now in Dallas. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.